We find in the Gemara, there are two places it talks about doing an examination, the Chorim U'Sadokim, to check all the nooks and crannies. One is in Maseches Pesachim, when it talks about doing Bedikas Chametz. And the other is in Maseches Nida, when it describes a woman examining herself to become Tahira after being Tamei Nida. The Torah tells us that a woman who sees dam, a woman who bleeds, will be tamei for 7 days, at the conclusion of which she will do what we call one bedika and one examination, hefsek tahara, and she'll go to mikveh that night. The Gemara tells us, "Benois Yisrael hichmir al atzmon." The daughters of Israel were strict, and they adopted a chumrah that even when they see tipas dam kechardol, even if they would just see one drop of blood the size of a mustard seed, Yosheva Saleh Shivan Akiyim, she would go through a 7-clean-day process. The Rishonim, Ramban, Meiri tell us that this chumrah was embraced by the Chachmei Yisrael. It's not like the Benos Yisrael on their own could make such a chumrah up and impose it on their husbands. This is something that Chachamim agreed to and became halacha psuko. And that is the halacha. Now, this halacha of Yosheves Aleh Ashiv Nekiyim, to go through 7 clean days, is not a halacha in Hilchas Nida, it's a halacha in Hilchas Ziva. The Rambam tells us, Perek Vav Hilchas Yisrabia, that when a woman sees dam, whether it's her regular cycle or not, so she's Tamei, she'll be Tamei for 7 days, even if it's one drop, whether she's all 7 days, whether she doesn't. If she then continues to see blood when she doesn't expect to see blood after those 7 days have elapsed, that enters into the world of Zav, or Zava. That enters the world of Zava, and if she sees 3 days consecutively during that time, she'll be what's called a Zava Gadola, or a regular Zava, and it's required for her to go through 7 clean days. And what the Gemara is telling us is that the Benos Yisrael adopted a practice that even if she just saw one drop of blood, which most likely has to do with her regular period or something else, they would be strict and accept upon themselves that this should be treated as if it's Ziva and requires a full 7 clean days. This means that in addition to the single examination at the end of the Nidus, the Hefsek Tahara, there'll also be a requirement for examinations throughout the 7 clean day period. And there's many different opinions in Rishonim as to how that is done. The Rishonim disagree on what is the requirement of the 7 clean days, because there's a tension that shows up in a number of places of halacha. The tension is that nida has 2 characteristics. On the one hand, it's din and tumah tahara, and when it comes to things that are kodesh, so there's issues, you have to be tahar. And then there's the other world of issa v'heter, the world of what's mutter, what's asr. And it happens to be that here there's a confluence of the two, that when she's tamei, she's asura. And when she's Tahira, she's Muteris. So a number of halachas from the Gemara, there's room to question, are these specific to Tum and Tahara, or they're included in the discussion of Issa V'Heter when it comes to being permitted to her husband. So Shita's arrive it is that when the Gemara says that a woman should examine herself B'Chayin U'Sadokin, with Hichas Nida, she should examine herself in the nooks and crannies, the Rabbi says it has nothing to do with her husband. That is only with Taharis. If she's going to eat Truma, she's Neshes Kayin. If she's going to have from a carbon, she has to make sure she's Tahira. So we worry about Chorin Usadok. We worry about all the nooks and crannies. She has to do a very thorough exam. But to be mutter to her husband, there's no such requirement. No such thing. For a woman to be mutter to her husband, she does not have to make such an examination. The din of Chorin Usadok is only the Taharis, not Labaila. This is the view of the Ravid. And the Nadi Yehuda wants to say that he believes the Rif and the Rambam hold this way as well. However, the Nadi Yehuda's Talmud, But Sal Runshberg disagrees, says, no, the Ram doesn't hold that way. We associate the Shita with the Raivin. The question is if whoever else may hold like the Raivin in that regard. Ramban, in his Chiddushim Maseches Nida, writes, in his Halachas writes, that even for a woman to be permitted to her husband, she would have to do a Hefsek Tahara, examining a thorough exam, L'chonu Sadakum. This requirement to make sure all the nooks and crannies are checked applies to her husband, but only when it comes to the Bedika, that one Bedika at the end of Nidus, the Bedika Hefsek Tahara. When it comes to the 7 clean days, there's no such halach, he says. The 7 clean days, she's already established to be Tahara. When she did Hefsek Tahara, we've shown that she stopped bleeding. Why should she do Chonu Sadakum after that? There's no halacha, he says, to do Chonu Sadakum for the rest of the 7 clean days. The Ritva agrees with Ramban in this approach. Then there's the Shitas HaRashba, where the Rashba writes that no, the requirement to do a thorough exam in the Chonu Sadakum is for every Bedika. It's for the Hefsek Tahara, it's for the 7 Nikiyim. All of them require this thorough exam, and the Shitas are always like that way as well. So we have these three Shitas. One that for husband and wife, there's never such a requirement, the Shitas Arivid. Then you have the Shitas Ramban, that for Hefsek Tahara, you need Chayrus and Dokin, but after that, not. And the Rashba says all of them need it. The Rosh, in Meseches Nida, says that the Bedika that we are instructed should be done l'chernu sedakim ad mokam shehashemesh dosh. V'lo shetachni senem ma'at kaneach atzma. The Rosh adds something new. Not only should this be a thorough exam to make sure you get all the nooks and crannies that there's no blood, but also it should penetrate to a depth equal to that of penetration during intercourse. That is not mentioned by the Ramban, by the Rashba, certainly not by the Ravid. The Rosh introduces this idea of how deep this exam should be, and the Kitzur Hichos Nida from the Rosh says this as well, that not only the Hefsek Tahara, but all Zayin Nekiyim should be Chornu Sadakim. It's true with the Rosh as well. Sefer Eshkol also writes this, Ad Malkum Shehashemesh Dosh, to the same penetration at the time of intercourse. So first of all, the Rashi himself asked the question, why should there be such a requirement? Why should we need such a thorough exam to make sure that there's nothing in any of the creases, if you will, that a woman has to check to make sure there's no dam? And he said, because we know that it's possible for blood to drip in the sides of the walls and be caught over there. And by examining the Chornu Sadakin, we've shown there's nothing there. So the Sidri Tahara asks on the Rashba, who cares if there's blood there? If she stopped bleeding from the uterus, the blood we're worrying about is blood from the uterus. We're not worried about any blood from the walls around. We're worried about blood from the uterus. If the uterus is no longer bleeding, so that's it. She's done. Her Nida is done. Why be worried if there's still blood on the walls that we're going to find out by doing a thorough exam that there's nothing there? Who cares if there's any blood over there? So his answer is, the concern we have, to say to Tahara says, the concern we have is that when a woman bleeds, especially near the end, it may not come out in a big flow. It may trickle and only get caught on the sides. So we don't know that she stopped bleeding. It could be she's actually still bleeding from the uterus, but in small amounts that just catches on to the sides of the walls. And therefore, we need a thorough exam to make sure that there's nothing there. The Chuvus Rekivi Eger also brings that if we don't check the Chornu Sadakim, you're not going to be able to do a bedika exactly by the opening of the cervix to know that she stopped bleeding from there. So we do around the sides, and that way we know we did the proper thing. We know that there's no more bleeding. The Sidri Tahara goes on to say that there's no question this is only midrabanan. There is no Torah requirement to do such a thorough exam. And he points out that a kala really cannot do a thorough exam, and yet her exam is sufficient to allow her to go to mikvah. So the Torah can't require such an exam. Rather, it's from the chachamim. And when it's possible, you do as thorough as you can. And when it's not possible, they say you don't have to do it. And this is also brought from a tshuva sabach, that this has to be drabbanan. The Nodeb Yehuda wrote a tshuva that's quoted in many of the poskim, where he says that there's no question the requirement to examine charenu sadakim for a husband is only d'rabbanan. The Ravid says there is no such requirement to begin with. The Rishonim who argue on him are not saying midiraisa it's necessary. It's only midrabbanan necessary. And therefore, he goes on to say that in cases of women who have makkah, who have some kind of internal injury, we're going to be lenient with them because Rabbanan would not impose this upon them if it was not possible to do. And he also brings the fact that a kala can do an examination before she gets married, even though it's not possible for her to do a real thorough exam. Chazanish writes this as well. Chazanish writes, the requirement to check Bechornis Adalkin to do this thorough exam and not just to wipe herself. He starts saying, because when women bleed, like the Siddur Tahara, they don't always gush. It could come out in a slow trickle and get caught on the sides. But he said, and when by doing such an exam on the sides, so it's a clarity to us that she has stopped bleeding. However, any way that we can examine and find out that she's no longer bleeding, and it works for most women, would be enough midiraisa. In other words, whatever way we come up with examining a woman to make sure she stopped bleeding would work min ha'Torah. The din charenu sadakim is midrabanan because it works. It's a good way to do it. If you do charenu sadakim, the Chacham said, now we can see that she stopped bleeding. But that's not the only way. He says if she would clean herself several times, even a kinuach, several times, and it comes out clean, that should also be sufficient to established that she is no longer bleeding. And he proves it from the Gemara in Nedarim, where the Gemara says in Laman Heyam Abayz that there's a discussion of bringing a carbon ziva for a child, a girl who's a child, could also be a zava. Now, how's she doing her bedikas? She's a child. Teretz is, on a Torah level, it's possible to become tahira from ziva even without doing this thorough exam of charenu sadakim. So the others say it like a svara. Chazir says it's pasha. They're bringing the raya from a kala. He says, what about the Gemara Nedarim? That it could have a zava who's a katana. And yet she brings the carbon ziva. She's went through the process. It can't include a deep, thorough exam because she can't do such a thing. So clearly it's not a Torah requirement.
So when I had my first daughter, they advised us that you should not be surprised that the newborn's going to menstruate because of the hormones from the mother. Is that what you're referring to? A newborn? Or are you referring
no,
to
I'm not talking about either. The Gemara talks about a newborn as well. But no, I'm not talking about a newborn. And it's possible, whatever it is. I mean, there are more and more early age puberties going on today before 12 years old as well. But it could be the Gemara's talking about that. The Gemara is discussing the concept, you know, how often that happens, I don't know. But this much the Chaznish extrapolates from the Gemara that this thorough exam cannot be midiraisa. So the question is like this. Here's the bottom line. What happens when a woman cannot do a bedikah charenu sadakim? So one of the Sfarim being example, if remember she broke her hand. Her hand's in a cast. She can't do the bedikah. Now maybe say used her other hand. I don't know, she's not that adept with the other hand. If she cannot physically do the bedikah because her hand is in a cast, so what's she supposed to do by bedikahs? So one sefer says that she doesn't have to do the bedikah. Someone else could do it for her. The halach is a different woman could do the bedikah for this lady. If she's embarrassed to have someone else do it for her, so tough luck. Then you're just stuck. You're stuck because it's not like there's no eitz. So there is an eitz. Someone else could do it. Now, today we have, in many communities, including ours, a woman who's designated as a bodekes. There's a woman we have in a community who's a nurse. In many communities, it's a nurse. Not always a nurse, but in this case, it's a nurse. And she's trained specially to be a bodekes. And someone can make an appointment. The way we work in our city is it's rabbinically referred. The person doesn't call up on their own. It has to be the rav who sends the woman to the bodekes. And the bodekes, as the name implies, can do a bedikah. Half of the job of the bodekes is to examine inside if there is a makkah. Very often, someone will come to me with a shayla, and I'll look at it and say, you have something wrong inside. I'm pretty sure there's a makkah. And if it's a makkah, that's the blood is not coming from the uterus, then this bedikah will not invalidate your 17 days. But I can't go just on my say-so that I look at them and say, I'm sure this is a makkah. You need someone to actually look inside and see that it is a bleeding makkah. Makkah is musidam. So we make an appointment with the bodekas. It used to be, before we had a bodekas, I would say, you make an appointment with your doctor. It could be a day or two till they see. By the time the doctor sees, by that point, it's healed. You can't see anything anymore. With the bodekas, it's much more efficient. And the bodekas will check and see, yes, I see a makkah. I see a makkah, it's motzi dam. And that will not mess up her 7-day count. The one time I had a case, the blow was on the edge. I was certain there's a makkah. I said, go see the bodekas. And the bodekas said, calls me back, I don't see any makkah. I don't see any makkah. I said, there's got to be a makkah. Look again. But I'm telling you, look maybe closer to the outside. She was looking more in depth. I said, look out. And she called back after. She looked further out, and she found the makkah. She found the makkah. It's like, basically, I think when she was putting in the cloth, that's when it was getting bleeding, even before it got inside. So the bodekas, on the one hand, will be able to do an exam and see if there's actually something that's causing blood to come onto the cloth that has nothing to do with her uterine bleeding. But there's another thing the bodekas can do. The bodekas can do a bedika. Bodekas can do a bedika. Sometimes if there's a makkah, so how does a person do the bedika without hitting the makkah? Some women could do it, some women can't. So then the bodekas can do the bedika while looking inside and make sure to avoid the area of the injury. And then that's a kosher bedika, and there's nothing wrong with it because she avoided the injury part. So if this woman, Nebuch, broke her hand and cannot do a bedika, so the Sefer says, let someone else do the bedika. So she can't do the bedika. She can't do a bedika. Someone else do the bedika for her. I imagine this case could be even someone maybe arthritic. Might have a hard time manipulating the cloth around. Maybe that could be such a case too. So he says, Sefer said, let someone else do the bedika. And if she's embarrassed, she's stuck. By the way, not everyone wants to go to bedekas. I tell them, you have to go to bedekas. I don't want to go to bedekas. Okay, what else to do for you then? I can't, you know, just because it looks to me like a makkah is not enough for halacha to say it's okay. I'm convinced it's a makkah. You got to see a bedekas. So people have to make a choice. At that point, you make a choice. Either you start again or you see the bedekas. So for the woman who cannot physically do the bedika, so someone else should do the bedika for her. And if you have a professional bodekas who's doing it, and they're comfortable enough to see the bodekas, then that would certainly be an etza. Rav Shimon Eider quotes that he heard from Rav Moshe that if you put in a bedika cloth, a moch dochuk, for the span of Ben HaShmashos, let's say it's 45 minutes, it's the equivalent of bedika charnas tokin. So he's saying that you don't have to rotate the cloth inside or around the sides to do the nooks and crannies. If you leave it in for 45 minutes, that is the equivalent of charis dokim. It's a big chiddush. It's a big chiddush to say that. But that's what he brings. And according to that, then a woman who can get the cloth in, but she can't rotate around, that would be good enough. And again, if she's using the wrong hand, so maybe that much she could do. Maybe she can't do the full charis dokim, but to put in the moch dokim, she can. That's good enough to be considered a bedika. I have seen other tshuvas that write very stridently that there are women who will use a tampon and put it in and think that's a bedika charnas dokim, and it is not. That is not the charnas dokim. That does not qualify for the charnas dokim. So I'm not sure if they were talking about just putting it in and taking it out as opposed to putting it and leaving it in for 45 minutes. Or even if it's 45 minutes, they'll disagree. Now, Rav Moshe seemingly would say, that's fine. Rav Moshe would say, you put it in 45 minutes, take it out. That's good enough. But other poskim disagree that that's not called bedikas charnas dokim. And it could be, again, I don't know, they don't specify if it's a time element or not, how long is there. Maybe that would make a difference. We mentioned that most of the Rishonim are not discussing how deep to penetrate with this bedika. However, the Rosh says the bedika should go as far as penetration occurs during intercourse. The Torah, Shulchan Aruch Siman Kuf Tzadivov, writes that she should insert the bedika cloth of Charnas Dokim ad Mokum She'ever HaTashmash Magia as deep as penetration during relations. If she didn't do it, that's just kinuch bi'alma. It's just wiping yourself, and it doesn't count as a bedika. The Beis Yosef says this Torah is based on the Rosh, Hagos Maimini, and the Rosh's Talmud, Rabbein Yeruchim. And the Beis Yosef asks, Devarim Eilu Koshin Beinai, how can that be? How is a woman supposed to put a bedika cloth and check herself so deep to be equal to the depth that the Rosh is describing? It's not happening. And if she really figures out a way to do it, she's going to hurt herself. She's going to hurt herself. She's going to cause injury to herself. She'll end up with blood on the cloth that has nothing to do with bleeding from the uterus. Why would a person even attempt to do such a thing? He goes on to say, I heard from the women who are pikhus, the experts, they tell me that the zakenim were megamgimin al b'dikuzu. They said, no, how can you do such a deep examination? It's EF shalasos. Then the Beis Yosef writes, I got a hold of the Kisri Mahari Isserlin, we call it the Sefer Tumas Hadeshen. Tumas Hadeshen writes, B'dikas ish azayin ekiyim, ad malkam shehashem ish dosh, to do it as deep as penetration. I already heard from the Medaktikim that the other Chiburim never said such a thing. B'dika yafu l'char l'stalkin, you have to do a good B'dika, the nooks and crannies, and that's it. But more than that not. So the Beis Yosef explains who are the other Chiburim, the Smag, the Smak, Sefer Tumas, Ramban, they all say to check a thorough exam, but not the depth. They don't discuss how deep to go. They don't say this far. And the Rosh who brings it, maybe Lav Davka, how are you supposed to go so deep? And then he asks Bechlal, those who do say you have to go so deep, why do you have to go so deep? Why is it necessary to go so deep? So the answer is because we're afraid that blood that comes from the uterus and gets caught in the Beis Hachitzon is also problematic, so you have to check that far, but it's not practical. So the Beis Yosef concludes that a Baal Nefesh, someone who is extra careful, should follow like the Rosh and Bnei Yuchmas Maimini and do such a bedika and tell their family to do a Hefsek Tahara, and one of the bedikas of the Zayin Nekiyim, Admakam Sheshem Eshtosh. And the rest of the bedikas, you don't have to do that far anyway. He says the poskim who say to do bedikas every single day are not the ones who say to go that deep. So that's what he says. A Baal Nefesh, you want to be an extra careful person, extra chasidus, Baal Nefesh. So the Hefsek Tahara and one of the bedikas Zayin Nekiyim. But that's it. The rest could be ordinary bedikas. When you look at Shulchan Aruch, in Kuf Tzadis Vav, Shulchan Aruch says that these bedikas that a woman does, whether it's Hefsek Tahara, whether it's the Zayin Nekiyim, has to be deep, L'charam L'sadakim, Ad Malkim Sheshem Eshtosh, until the depth of penetration. And make sure there's nothing red on the bedika. Not just a little bit to wipe yourself. If it's very difficult to do such a deep exam, then lepachos, a minimum, the Hefsek Tahara on day one of the seven Akim should be that deep. And the Amar says that if she didn't do that, if she didn't do it that deep, so the Amar says, b'diyeved, if you didn't do it, just a good b'dikah chorus to talk in, as deep as you can go, that's also good enough. So the Mechaber seems to come away from what he said in Beis Yosef, and he writes as a straight halach, doesn't say this is for Baal Nefesh, not a chomer, he says straight up, it should be a deep until Mokvah Shemesh Dosh, as far as penetration occurs during intercourse. If b'diavad, you can't do that, Yiksha b'nea, so for at least for Hefsek Tahara and day one of the seven Akiyim. And Ramah says, listen, if you can't do that, but the Evid, any Badika is good as long as you harm a stalkim, as far as you can go. So, numerous poskim write that there is no requirement, the Arisa, to go that deep. Beis Achitzon, she should go. There's a truer from Divya Yatsiv from Kosenberg Rebbe, who says that maybe the Lashon, there's two terms, Admakam Shemesh Dosh and Admakam Sheha Eva Magia. The Torah says a stronger language. As far as penetration goes, maybe Mokam Shemesh Dosh means in the same place where relations occur, that's where you do the bedika. That's what it means. But not how deep it goes. And Divya Yatsiv goes on to say that the only requirement is to check the Beis Achitzon, so there's no requirement to check beyond that what we call the Prusner. So I asked the Klausenberg Adar in Yerushalayim, I said, so what does this mean? What's the Beis Achitzon and what's the Prusner? He said, very simple, as far as your finger goes, is the Beis Achitzon. Your finger doesn't go, that's the Prusner. Which is like saying what everyone else says, just put your finger in, as far as it goes, that's good enough. He doesn't say it like that, so yeah, that's what it means. So, practical halacha, we don't attempt to go that far in, Shalev, all the Kateri Poskim say this, that really don't try to go too far because you'll cause injury if you go too far. So rather, a woman takes her finger and as far as she can go without hurting herself, will do an exam thoroughly on the size, and that's the requirement. As far as the seeming contradiction of Shulchan Aruch, so I did see that Rav Asher Weiss has a true v'chele gimel of Minchas Asher, specifically asking this question, how deep do you go? You have a steer in the Mechaber and the Beis Yosef. And the basic question is in general, what do you do when you have a machlokes between the Mechaber and the Beis Yosef? You have a contradiction between the rights and Beis Yosef, which is the Iker? And he brings that there is a machlokes in that as well. The Chikrei Lev writes that the Iker is the Beis Yosef, and you only follow Beis Yosef, yet the Chidah says, no, you go by the Shulchan Aruch. So I looked in Chacham Avad Yosef, because he lives on the Beis Yosef Mechaber. What do you do in such a machlekes? And he also brings the array of shitas. Some said that you follow Beis Yosef. Others say you go by the Mechaber. And he concludes, based on a lot of the tshuvas that came after the Chidah as well, that the Iker is what he wrote last. What he wrote last is the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is what comes last. In general, machlokes Beis Yosef and Shulchan Aruch. In fact, he says if there's a machlokes in the Shulchan Aruch itself, sometimes you have contradictions in the Shulchan Aruch. He says you go by the second psach. Like there's a machlokes in Hichlus Shabbos and Hichlus Hashanah about paying chazonim on Shabbos. He says you go with the later psach. Whatever comes later is going to be the ikar. So if that's the approach, then it comes out of Bichumro for Bedikas, because the Mechaber is not saying a Baal Nefesh should do this. He's saying everyone should do it. Rav Asher Weiss writes that even though he holds that Lamaisi Shafal Shulchan Aruch when it disagrees with Beis Yosef, in this case he says for sure you follow Beis Yosef. Why? Because Beis Yosef has all his kashas. He has all his kashas on the rush. How can it possibly be you check so far? It's come on impossible. You're going to cause injury. I heard this from the Medaktikim. I saw in the Tumas Adeshin. He didn't change his mind from all that. He has a whole page in the Beis Yosef explaining why he disagrees with the Rosh, the Halacha. You don't have to check so deep. It's not mistaber that that should be the requirement. And therefore, he comes out that in this case, certainly, we'd be more lenient. La Halacha, all the poets are going to say that La Halacha we try to do, as far as her finger will go, a thorough exam on all the sides, to make sure that she's Tahira, this goes for Hezgatar and the Zainakim. However, because there's so many different shitas, there are times when we have leniencies depending on the situation. We mentioned the case of injuries in Makis, where we have to be extra careful not to exacerbate the problem and do bedikas that will just come out with blood that has nothing to do with her menstrual cycle, has it just to do with injury. So there are cases where women have endometriosis, which could exhibit itself in many different ways, and there's other many symptoms, and many times often misdiagnosed or not diagnosed. The tissue, which normally goes inside the uterus, ends up growing outside the uterus. And I was at a conference this past summer and showing all different really weird cases how this can happen. But what's relevant to bedikas is when this occurs near the cervix or in that area. So now you have tissue, which is usually lining the uterus, which is a very sensitive tissue. This is outside the uterus. And a bedika that touches that is going to have blood on it. So a lady who has endometriosis will have a very hard time becoming tahira because her bedikas are always touching this very sensitive tissue. And it has nothing to do with bleeding from the uterus. But you don't know until someone takes a look inside. Now, it can be surgically treated, which maybe in the case of Taharas Mishpach is the best. There's other aitzes of hormonal treatment and other things, and it also depends where the endometriosis shows itself. But one of the aitzes is just don't do such a deep bedika. If she finds that putting her finger in as deep as she can go, she is hitting an area that has this sensitive tissue, so don't go so deep. Don't go so deep. The depth requirement is not in most Rishonim. Most Rishonim are not talking about how deep to go. They're just saying do a thorough exam on all the sides, and the Chorom is stalking. To require that, Mogamash Hashem is Dosh, that's the Rosh of Bedi Ruchim, because Maimini, the other Rishonim don't say it. And even the person go to Beis Achitzo, fine, so go to Beis Achitzo. So I've heard different Lushchois, and I'm still trying to find in Svarim, you know, I haven't seen in the Sefer Zos Baal Peh how deep to go. I've been told that for a Kala, as long as she gets her first knuckle in, that's already a bedika, because a kala has a very hard time doing bedikas. As long as she gets to her first knuckle, that's already called a bedika chorus adokin. or she doesn't need more than that because she can't do more than that. And it could be for someone suffering from endometriosis, even the second knuckle will be good enough. You don't have to get all the way down to the hand. Maybe even the second knuckle, if there's that much bedika penetration, will be good enough. Because as we said, the depth is not clearly defined in most of the Rishonim. Most Rishonim say the ikur is just do around the sides carefully. They don't say how deep to go. And therefore, that would also be an example where we would go with a lesser depth because of the injury inside. In our machzer of review, so this year we are up to reviewing the halachas of Vestos, the anticipatory days when a woman expects to get a period, and the requirement to check herself on those days that she expects to get a period. So to briefly review, we have essentially three times that we do these things. There are some women who have a set cycle of eskavua, and they just check themselves on the expected time they anticipate to get their period, whatever the kavias is. However, most women do not have eskavua. Some people say this changed by World War II, that we don't have eskavuas anymore. That common is very rare. And for women who do not have a set cycle, exactly like clockwork when it comes, so we do three exams on the same day of the month, the Yom HaChodesh, if it occurred last month on the 14th of Kislev, then on the 14th of Teves would be the Yom HaChodesh. There's also a concern of Haflaga, the distance between the two periods, and then she would project the next period would be the same distance apart. That's called Vesta Haflaga. And the third is what we call onabenis, which is an artificial or simulated kavias that we assume by day 30 or 31 she'll get her periods of machlokas, which day is the day of onabenis, is day 30 or 31. For most part, we end up saying just do both 30 or 31. Half the time, 30 or 31 includes the Yom HaChodesh anyway. So it's six times of the year that it's a chum of an extra day, and it just makes life a lot simpler just to follow 30 or 31. So basically, we tell women to examine themselves 30 or 31 and on the Onibenis, I'm sorry, and the Haflaga. Whatever the Haflaga was, she should follow up on those three times and should do examinations. If the last time she got a period was the morning hours means sunrise to sunset, then she would do the first examination in the morning after sunrise and the second one before sunset. If the last time she got a period was in the evening hours, after sunset, before sunrise, then she would examine herself in the evening after Sisko Chavim. And the second exam, we usually say when she gets up in the morning. Some posts will say before she goes to bed at night. Makes more sense to me when you get up in the morning, because what happens between the time you go to sleep and wake up, it's still a lot of evening hours. So those are the exams that she does. Sometimes it's difficult for her to do exams, and we may recommend us to do one examination instead of two. But the simple halacha is to do two examinations at the beginning and the end of the period when she anticipates to get her flow. If she did not get her flow, she did examinations, then she's muteris. She's muteris. After a few days, you might want to do a pregnancy test and see what's going on. But if she's not pregnant, then it could be she'll be getting her period soon. And a person has to use chachma to figure out how to conduct himself during that time. She's tahira, but if you're expecting her to get a period shortly, so you have to be careful. Now, in order to be able to keep track of the vestos, it's a requirement to have a calendar, a chart, where you write down when the last period was and when you anticipate the next period. The Svarim that I've seen writes so strongly that just like it's usur for a man to live with his wife without a ksuba, it's usur to live with his wife without a calendar. You have to have a calendar. You have to know exactly when it is, especially if people go on vacation. Make sure to check your calendar before you go or bring it with you. It has happened. People have gone on their vacations. Totally forgot about the Vestas. And there was a mice that brought down on this farm that in the middle of relations, she became a Nida, and afterwards they found it afterwards. That was a Vest night. They were not supposed to be together at all that time because she was expecting her period that time, and they just forgot about the calendar. So it's imperative to have a calendar. It's imperative to keep track of the calendar, especially if you go away. And this is not something that a woman should do by herself. Her husband definitely should be involved in this. Some college teachers are telling the girls that this is your private business. No one else has to know about it. That's not true. Her husband definitely has to know about it. It could be something to do together. But something he definitely has to be aware of, her schedule, just like she has to be aware of her schedule. Now, in the modern era, Plenty of women don't borrow their calendars anymore. They have their smartphones and their Vest app, and I haven't seen the Vest app, but I've heard about it. We used to talk about computer programs. Now it's way beyond. Now we're in the Vest apps. And the Sfarim that I've seen discourage using apps, but could be they discourage anything modern, so I don't know. You know. But so you have the app that keeps track. So the problem is the lady calls me up. Her phone crashed, her app is gone, and she has no clue where she's at. Now, it's possible you could use a calendar, too. I once had a lady kept a written calendar, and she traveled with the calendar, and then she lost it. You know, you travel, you lose things, and she comes back, and she can't find the calendar. The calendar's gone. So it happens that the calendar disappears. It could happen, whether it's a written calendar or an app. The halacha is, if a woman has zero clue, she does not know. She just does not know when her last period was because her calendar got lost, her app crashed. She just doesn't know. She can't recreate it. She just doesn't know. The din is she has no vestos. She has no vestos. That's the halacha. Vestos that we calculate, according to most post-Madra Bonum, the time frame when she expects her period, she could be also derived to her husband based on a pasuk. Gemara Shavuos makes a drasha. She's out of Sfinei Yisrael. But the calculation that we make, most people say, is Rabban. And the fact that we separate from our wives during those times when she expects to get her period is Rabban. What are you supposed to do? She has no idea. So we're going to say she's also for the rest of her life. We don't say that. We don't say she's also until her next period either. We don't do that. The halacha is she's mutter. Every day is a suffer to Rabban Lakula, and we're going to be lenient. However, that being said, it's probably kedai if you have an app to maybe find a way to make sure it's secure. In my mind, I'm thinking maybe a wife or husband can email to the other one what are the days for the next month, and that way it's never lost because you just look up your email anywhere in the world, get a computer and check your emails, and you'll see the days. So that might be a way to preserve the date, especially if you're traveling. So put it on email, and then even if the app goes, the email is there. So it's maybe another step, but that way you kind of save yourself agmas nefesh of losing where you're at. Whatever works for a couple works, but clearly you have to have a cheshbon. It has to be in a place where you'll remember it. Maybe you have reminders, put reminders in your phone for next month. You can do that too when the vest is coming up. But I do see the possibilities for this getting lost in the shuffle, and you should do it in a way that the calendar is available and clear and not something that someone will overlook and forget. The halacha is that if a woman did pass a vest and did not do the examination that she was supposed to do, if it was a vest hafloga, she is mutter to her husband. If it's a yom hachodesh, she is mutter to her husband. If it's onabeinus, she is not mutter. She is asura until she does that bedika. The onabeinus is more strict. The same if a woman had a vest kavua and she missed her examinations, the halacha is that she would not be permitted to be with her husband until she does an examination. So this is definitely an integral part of Taharas Mishpacha, and the luach, the calendar, is central to this, or the app, whatever it is, but you should figure it in a way and do it in such a way that you kind of protect yourself that it shouldn't get lost. That it shouldn't get lost. You shouldn't be in a position of being without a clue of when was the last time that you had a period and then not know exactly how to go forward with that. Did the Evid, if it happened, yes. Now, Lochas will say that if she lost her calendar, she is mutter to her husband, and she doesn't have to do bedikas every day. But at the same time, a person should take the precautions of avoiding that. One of the most common contemporary questions of vestos is when women are using birth control and assuming they spoke with the Rav and asked what's the proper birth control and what's permitted. Some birth controls are permitted, some are not permitted. And they're using a permitted form of birth control, particularly if it's with a hormone, and that affects the periods. So then how does that affect my vestos? Does that change the rules of vestos once she is taking a pill or any other method of hormone delivery, which there are several? So then do I really have to worry about a vest when I know this is controlled by the medicine we're taking? So there's a machlokes in the poskim. There's the screen to the poskim. Do we rely on the fact that no period is occurring with this medication, that we don't have to worry about the vestus? Or do we say that no, the medication is not foolproof and she should still count her calendar the regular way? It is my opinion that even when taking hormone therapy to prevent pregnancy, one should follow all the rules of Vestas as if she wasn't. And this is based on the rationale that even with these hormones, many women will experience what we call breakthrough bleeding. The body has a mind of its own, so to speak, and it kind of does what it's supposed to do one way or the other, even with hormones. And very often a doctor will say, yeah, you won't get a period for 3 months, and that's very exciting for a woman, except she starts dating after 2 months or 1 month and a half. And for the rest of the world, it's irrelevant. But for halacha, it's a big deal. So it doesn't always work the way the doctor recommends. And I've done research, and basically, I think most of the rabbinic literature, the tshuvas on this topic, are before the current methods of birth control. The current methods have much smaller doses of the actual hormone. It's called microdoses, and is much more prone to breakthrough bleeding than it was in the past. So I don't even know how much to wait to put in a tshuva in 20, 30 years ago, because it was a different medicine. It was a different medication then than it is today. And with today's medications, the likelihood of breakthrough bleeding is much greater. And it could well be that Poskim in the past who said, don't worry about it, would say today to worry about it. So my feeling is that one should follow the regular rules of Vestas, even when taking birth control pills to prevent pregnancy. The fact that they're introducing hormones to prevent a period doesn't mean that we've suspended the halachas of Vestas. That's my feeling based on, again, the fact that there's so many instances of breakthrough bleeding given the doses today. Very often, when a woman is experiencing a problem, we may tell them to increase the dose, and that will eliminate the staining. Of course, I always point out I cannot instruct anyone to do that. That would be prescribing a medicine without a license to do so, and I could be arrested. So the doctor said to me, you can never prescribe medicine. Don't tell her to double her dose. So I say, you could speak to your doctor. He may tell you to double the dose. I can't tell you to double your dose, but your doctor might tell you to double the dose. So even with doubling the dose, it's less medicine than the mothers were taking, you know, 30, 40 years ago. Just everything has changed in the way the medicine works. So my feeling is in the world of Vestas, we should still be concerned with Vestas, despite the fact that we are taking hormones to affect the periods themselves. There is a shaila that comes up when a woman gets her period right around sunrise or right around sunset. We said the halacha is when it comes to Vestas, we calculate by the day, sunrise to sunset, or the evening, which is post-sunset for sunrise. It's not alos shachas es kechavim. It's based on the sunrise and sunset. That's how we work it. So lahalocha, if a woman wasn't sure if she got her period before or after sunset, she only checked herself a little after sunset, and she sees she's bleeding. She doesn't sure if it started before or not. The din is we go with after sunset. If she's not sure if it started before sunrise or after sunrise, we say it was after sunrise. That's the lachon shulchan aruch. She's not sure when it happened, when she got her period, we always assume it's the later time. And this might go into the fact that the whole thing, our calculation is rabbanon anyway, so that's what we do. When we know for sure, that's what we go with, not based on the fact that it was a suffix, maybe it was before. We don't worry about before, only after. So the question is, she wakes up in the morning after sunset, and there is so much dam that she sure had to start before. Can we extrapolate from the amount of blood to say this must have started before sunrise? So I've seen some swarm to say yes, you would do that. That even though she only sees it after sunrise, the same would be after sunset, but it couldn't have happened this much before sunrise or after sunset. So then you'd go back the time frame before. I would think that makes sense maybe within a few minutes, literally, of sunrise, sunset. But after 10, 15 minutes, how do you know? I mean, you could tell for sure this all had to have happened beforehand? To me, it's very hard to say that. The Shulchan Aruch just says if you have a suffix, you go with the later time. In my mind, the only way to assume it was earlier based on the quantity of the dam would have to be within minutes of sunrise or within minutes of sunset that we can make such a calculation and say that it had to have happened beforehand. Otherwise, we just go to Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, if you don't know, then the halacha states that you have to assume it was the later time. We do not assume it was the earlier time. When keeping a calendar it is important to keep track of the cycles to make sure that there isn't the development of a ves kavua. Now, we said before that ves kavua is very unlikely to have the exact same month by month. Most women have ves for ina kavua, but we also said a lot of women are taking hormones for birth control. When a woman's taking birth control hormones, it's very possible she will get a ves kavua. If she's on a strict regimen of her pills and her placebos or whatever delivery system, it could be she'll get a ves kavua based on her medication she's taking. So again, I would look at it like a ves kavua. Now, if she comes off the pills at a later point in time, so that could be everything will change, because we only had a kavias as long as she had the medication. Once she comes on the medication, I'm not so sure how strong that kavias will hold, and it probably won't hold. If a woman becomes pregnant, then obviously she passes her vestos and nothing happens. After her pregnancy is over and she goes to mikvah, then she will not start worrying about vestos until she gets a period. And there's different opinions, but what I made to understand, what's reasonable to me, is by the first period after a pregnancy, she will only calculate Yom HaChodesh the next month. That's it. If she already sees two times, so then we're going to do everything. The Haflogah, the Yom HaChodesh, the whole thing. But just one time, maybe one time is a fluke. One of the shayos that comes up is sometimes a woman will get that first period even before she goes to mikvah. A lot of women, they'll taper off bleeding after pregnancy, and then around 6 weeks, get a heavy flow. And it appears to be a period. For some women, it's literally within days of going to mikvah. She just went to mikvah, and then all of a sudden she gets this heavy flow. For other women, it's within days of when she thought she was going to the mikvah, and then her 6-7 days got interrupted with this heavy flow, and she wouldn't even go to mikvah yet. So the question is, do we worry about this flow even before she goes to mikveh in the context of vestas? So this is machlokus in the poskim. Marabim have said that if she has not gone to mikveh yet, then it does not count as a vest. It really is pretty obvious that this should be a hormonal discharge. It's like, I can't say it's for every woman in every pregnancy, but I've seen it enough times that it's clearly part of the hormones rebalancing themselves, that at about 6 weeks after pregnancy to get this flow. So I don't think it's anything to do with vestus, but lemaisa, if it happened after going to mikveh, so I would look at it that way. If it happened before she went to mikveh, I'd follow Bar Abayim said that it's not a vest. I was in a shir shom shir neitzes sol, and the Rav said in this scenario they counted the vestus. So I asked, why do we count the vestus? She didn't go to mikveh yet. It's all down from pregnancy. And an older man starts screaming, "Don't ask kashas during the shir." Okay. So I knew my shir. So anyways. They said to me, things about Yosef said the way I said it, but this Rav didn't agree with that. So the fact is, there are different opinions. My feeling is that one would be able to say that it's still part of the body getting back to itself, and one should not incorporate that into the calculation of anticipating vestus.
Why is there no on the maintenance after the first?
Because we don't know if it's a fluke or not. Really, a woman after giving birth should be mislek is dumb. She shouldn't have any periods at all. The Gemara says she can't get a period for 2 years, but we know she does. Today, Shtanativim, what do you want to say? She does get periods. So for one period, we're not going to say right away everything kicks in. Yom HaChodesh will do Yom HaChodesh. If she has two periods already, then we're going to chodesh for everything. I've heard other Rabbanim want to be more medical, even with two periods, wait till you have three periods. But that's what I was, Kibaldim Rabbi said, once you have two periods, at that point, she's like every other lady, you know, at this point, and she'll be seeing regular periods to do it. But one period alone is not enough. Also, again, the first period, this first period might be the period I just talked about. Maybe her first period was 2 days after going to mikveh at 6 weeks. It's unlikely this is going to tell me next month it'll happen again. This is still part of her body readjusting.
So why are we being mechayev between ves hachodesh and unabandoned?
Because the onabenis is a creating of ves kavua. When slek is dumb, there's no such thing. Yom HaChodesh is Yom HaChodesh. We know it's Yom HaChodesh. So we'll worry about Yom HaChodesh. By the way, some sheet is a whole Yom HaChodesh is onabenis anyway. So that way, Yechosh is onabenis. We'll go with the sheet that Yom HaChodesh is onabenis. So that's what we say. There's one day, that's the Yom HaChodesh. And if it happens again, then we'll worry about 30, 31 and the Haflogah. Some women will have discharges and stains. The halacha is there's no vestus with ksamim. There's no vestus by stains. Vestus is only a concern when you have a flow, when we anticipate the next flow. The fact that she may be tummy cause of a discharge does not mean we worry about next month. Why would we expect next month to have anything? What gets complicated are women who are on birth control and they'll see a little discharge for 2-3 days and it goes away and they're all discombobulated. Is this a period? Is it not a period? Am I tahara? Am I not tahara? It's very confusing. And for many women, they're not tameh because lahalacha, they're not seeing enough discharge to make them tameh. There's no flow, even if it goes on 3 days and then it stops and it's gone. If you call the doctor, he'll say, well, yeah, that was your period. You know, for that month, given what you're taking, given your IUD, whatever it is, that is your period. But Lamaya said there's no period. There's no halachic period. So even if medically that was called your period, if the discharges are small and they never turn into a flow, there's no vest to that. It's not a period, and there's no anticipating next month. Now, again, it may happen next month. But there's no halacha of anticipating. During those days when she is staining, I will tell a couple not to have relations because she may become a full-fledged nidah at any time. But if it passes for 24 hours and she clears up, then she's muteris. There's no halachas that kicked in. The real shaila becomes how much discharge becomes a flow. And this is a contested issue. How much of a discharge, at what point do you turn the corner from kesem into a flow? And generally we go with an amount like 2 inches square or a dollar bill folded in half. If it's that much dam, we have to treat it like a flow and a woman will be a nida. That may be on a tissue. If it's a big smear like that on a tissue, it may be on an undergarment. So, or maybe on a pad. If it's that amount, that quantity, we will treat it like a flow already. But if it's smaller, I guess it's a quarter, 2 quarters, when they're not sure, 2 quarters or 1 and a half, that's nothing to talk about. At that size, that is not going to make her nida. It's possible in the rule of ksamim, if it's on white, on her skin, that would be a kesem. That would make a term for kesem, no dinvestis. But if it's not on her skin and it's on colored undergarment or on a tissue, then we're not going to say that she is nida, and certainly we're not going to worry about vestos when you have these discharges that are not actually enough to make her nida.
Are you allowed to change your undergarment like?
A woman can change as much as she wants. Eventually, if it's for real, it's going to catch up to her. In other words, you can't escape reality. If it's coming, it's coming. But it is permitted. There's nothing wrong with changing undergarments several times if she has repeated states. That is not a problem. Again, eventually, if it's the real thing, it's going to happen, and you can't escape it. But sometimes it's just there's discharges, and it'll last for a few days, and maybe that will be the proper precaution. That's when she sees red on a bedikha cloth. When doing an internal exam, then the smallest amount is problematic, unless we know that this is not even from her. It could be a thread, it could be something else. But if it's from her, then even the size of a seed on a bedikha cloth is a problem. People get confused on this. They say, well, my bedikha cloth was less than a penny. It doesn't work that way. If a bedikha cloth, the penny's not in the parasha. That's on underwear. On a bedikha cloth, even a tiny bit would be a problem. And that's why we have so many issues with maka, because you could have an internal scratch or laceration that leaves a little bit of blood on a bedikha cloth. That already is an issue that has to be discovered. Is this maka or not? But that's when we talk about even the smallest part. Afilu rois tibetam kechado is when you do an exam and you find the exam, the chorin sedakim, you come up with this small amount. But if it's a discharge that's discovered on the undergarment, then that would not make a tummy. It's too small.
Should Misha wear
a bonnet? She does not have to. I have seen some Hasidic poskim say she should. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about wearing white, and I've heard from her first that basically if she only wants to do one bedik on the day of the vest, have two, she should wear white. As you combine the two, wearing white underwear, just do one bedikah. But if you're doing two bedikas, there's no halacha to wear white, even though I have seen some Hasidic poskim that would push. They're basically, it's based on the Chavos Das. Chavos Das said she needs a mechtochuk, the whole vest, and supposedly many of his wives divorced him because of this. So if you wear a white undergarment, so that would be the equivalent of the mechtochuk, so that would be a maila. But halacha, you don't pass it to the Chavos Das. So a maila, halacha, if you do two bedikas, we don't need, but there is a leniency, where Moshe brings that idea of one bedika with white underwear, so for some women they would opt for that option rather than two bedikas on the day of the fast.